You're listening to Make Your Way, Season 3, Episode 3. Welcome to Make Your Way, where we explore what it means to work and create on your own terms. Along with every episode, we post show notes with links to resources mentioned in the episode and a full transcript. You can find these materials at katielinder.work/podcasts. Hey, Sarah, how are you?
Good, Katie. How are you?
I am good. It is a beautiful Saturday morning. And the sun is shining. It is finally spring.
Yay!
Are you still experiencing snow on the ground in your neck of the woods?
Thankfully, no. Though if you'd asked me that a week and a half to 2 weeks ago, I would have said, yes, we have a foot and a half. Ha! But now we have leaves on our trees and the sun is shining through my window too. So life is much, much better.
Okay. This is exciting. And also exciting is today we are talking about platform choice in our ongoing series on building the thing. So, or building a thing. So in the first episode, we chatted about picking a topic and how do you define your expertise, thinking about your audience. In the second episode, we talked about content design, thinking about goals and objectives and what are the kinds of things you're trying to include in the thing you're building. And today we want to talk about content delivery. How are the different, what are the different methods you can think about for how you want to get your content out into the world? And we're going to talk about how we're making those decisions ourselves.
Yeah, I'm excited to dig in and especially, as always, Katie, to learn from you on how you do this stuff, because I have learned a ton from you on various parts of this already. And so I'm really curious to hear about how you think about content delivery and which platforms you use and why. Is it about user experience? Is it about ease for you on the back end? All of those kinds of things. So can you give us a little bit of a summary of what you're using for your building the thing this time around in your course development?
Yes. So for this course that I'm designing, I am using the same platform that I used for my previous course and also the platform where I house my webinars. And that is called Teachery. And this is a platform I chose because it is relatively simple. It's very much about kind of providing content in terms of like a video or something along those lines. There's a place to put in a transcript for that. There's a place to link some supplemental resources. And there's a way to embed discussion. It's not a ton of bells and whistles. And when I started looking around at course platforms, I looked at Teachable, I looked at Thinkific, I looked at some of these other ones that were out there. And to be honest, I felt very overwhelmed. They just had tons of tools and features. And I felt like it was actually really keeping me from building the thing when I was first trying to do a course that was kind of a larger master course. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up deciding to invest in something that is actually no longer available, but it was called By Our Future, which is a product by Jason Zook and his wife, Caroline Zook. And this is basically a collection of all the things they've ever created, including courses, software platforms, things like that. And it was for a one price where you could purchase that. And I think this is something I might have mentioned on season one that I had chosen to invest in. And Jason was the creator of Teachery. So now I have access to Teachery basically for free. I'm not paying a monthly fee for that. And I can build as many courses and things that I want in there. And there are also some other things that came with that package as well that I use for the products that I build. So Teachery makes a ton of sense for me because of its kind of minimalist look and feel. And also because I am not paying like a monthly fee to host things on that site. So let me pause there.
Yeah, no, that seems like a really great deal. I'm curious a little bit about when you were looking at some of the other platforms, what were the other bells and whistles that those had that you decided to move away from? And, you know, was it just a matter of you weren't sure how you'd use those or if you'd use them in the future or what kind of factored into that?
Well, some of them are things like quizzing features, more kind of interaction. And I got some good advice from someone when I was kind of first thinking through building that course. And they were like, you know, it was kind of the minimal viable product advice, because I'm automatically like, I want to talk to people every week and I want to have, you know, like live calls with people and like I want to be really interacting with these students. And it's just not something you can maintain and sustain over time, especially if you're building lots of products. And so they were like, you know, maybe less interaction is better. Like people can still have good engagement. And that goes against like everything I know about online learning in general. So it's a little bit of a problem. But I also think that when it comes to the audience I'm selling to, which is primarily academics, a lot of academics just want to be given the stuff and then they look through it themselves. Like they're kind of self-taught. They don't necessarily want the interaction. So I've built in pieces of that through a quarterly live webinar that I'm going to be hosting with this particular course I'm building and with a discussion forum that I'm hoping that people will use within the course that I will be actively engaging in. But other than that, but there's also in some of those platforms, and I think Thinkific is a good example of this, they have ways within the platform of creating content. So of doing like voiceover PowerPoints within their platform. So that part was also a little bit overwhelming to me because as our listeners know, you're kind of the video maven of our duo here. And I do very kind of amateur is maybe too strong of a word, but definitely more rudimentary, like voiceover PowerPoint type videos for my courses. And when I looked at some of these other tools and features, I was just like, this is too much. Like I need to record the audio. I need to have the slides. I need to layer the audio onto the slides. Like I don't want to have to do that within the platform. Right. Like it just felt overwhelming to try to make all those decisions. So the other piece too, I would say is that I really like that Teachery has a very simple kind of payment connection to Stripe, and it allows me to create an infinite number of payment pages. So depending on if I want to give something away for free, if I want to have a lot of different payment tiers, which I knew I was going to have for this particular product, it's very simple and easy to create those payment pages and to be able to have lots of different ways to kind of get people's information. And also because I was going to be shipping a product with this particular course, I'm doing a print workbook, which is another part of the content delivery. I would need like shipping information and things like that. So that's all relatively easy to do within the Teachery environment.
Interesting. So I'm a little less familiar with Stripe. Is it sort of like Square or like PayPal or some of these other ones, or is it more specific for just online products? Can you talk a little bit about Stripe?
It's very similar to what you've said. I don't know exactly like the ins and outs of like how they compare, but this is the thing that's kind of automatically embedded within Teachery. So it's it wasn't even like a choice that I made. It was just like, this is what comes with that. And basically what happens is people will make a purchase in Teachery. It happens through Stripe, and which is like a secure, you know, system, very similar to PayPal. And then I think they wait like a certain number of days to make sure there's not some kind of like, you know, reimbursement or whatever, like that. What's the word I'm looking for, Sarah? Return. Yeah. Like somebody doesn't want to return. And then they put the money directly into my bank account. Like it's just a transfer. And of course there's like a fee and they take a little fee off of that. But it's the same if somebody pays me via credit card, via FreshBooks, I have a fee taken out for that as well. So that's just part of the cost of doing business. So very simple and easy, and money just, you know, magically flows into my bank account.
That's the best feeling ever, where you just check your bank account and you're like, oh, hey, look, money. Where'd that come from?
Exactly. So yeah, but the newer thing here, I feel very comfortable with Teachery because I've used it for this other course that I built on academic book promotion. I've also used it extensively for my webinars now. And I also think that when people buy courses from me, if they're buying multiple things, then they're used to seeing this. So I don't want to like build things in lots of different platforms. I've also taken courses in other platforms from other online entrepreneurs and have not always liked the user experience. But when I've taken things in Teachery, I've really enjoyed it. So I'm just drawn to it as a user as well, which is a big deal for me.
Yeah, well, and I think there are a couple of great points that you bring up throughout your talk there, specifically the consistency of the experience for people. So if they know what your courses are going to look like, having bought one before, and I think that's a great way to kind of convey consistency in your brand too. And so I like the idea of just kind of picking one and sticking with it. That said, obviously, if there are needs to kind of switch things up a little bit, or if, you know, if Teachery were to become less user friendly or, you know, not as a good experience for the user, then you might obviously make some changes. But I think that's a really smart move to kind of keep things consistent as you're continuing to build courses, because that's a thing you're going to most likely continue to do.
Right. Well, and I definitely know it's a part of my business. The idea to house the webinar replays in there as well was important to kind of for me to kind of think about that in terms of where I was going to do that. I didn't want things just living on my YouTube channel, and I wanted something that was kind of password protected, and you know, that kind of thing as well. But also, I think it's a lesson in you don't always have to pick the product that has the most things. And I tend to look for things that they will allow me to grow and maybe scale in a direction that I'm like thinking about if I'm not currently doing something, but also that it's not giving me way more than I need to get something done. And when it comes to these courses, I mean, all my courses are primarily video based, and they're, you know, me just kind of delivering a certain amount of content and making sure that I can link in supplemental resources, making sure that they're accessible when they have transcripts and things like that. And, you know, that's kind of all I need right now. And that's okay.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other point that you're kind of underscoring here is the importance of thinking about your audience. So for listeners, as you're thinking about developing your product, you know, Katie, you said that your audience for these kinds of courses is primarily other academics. And so keeping in mind how other academics in general like to consume their information, right? They are learners of their own right. And so sometimes like to just have the information and then can dig into it at their leisure, as opposed to another audience, which might really benefit from the more interactive, you know, quizzing activity kind of online experience. I think it's important to be thoughtful about your audience when you're thinking about either which platform to go with or how you're going to design your content to begin with. So I think that's a great point as well.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with the content as well. Like, what are you asking them to do with the content?
Right.
And a lot of my courses have the participants in the courses trying to like apply what I'm talking about to a personalized situation for them. So I often include interactive workbooks, reflective questions, some kind of template for them to follow along. And with this course, I have this print workbook, which is basically a way for them to design a project while they're going through the content. They're also simultaneously like working on their own project. So, I mean, there's always those elements for me that I try to build in. And that's really where I see the interaction is them kind of applying it to their own situations. I'm way more interested in that than trying to like have a chat feature or something like that for this particular audience.
Or having activities just for the sake of having activities as opposed to it being actually useful for your user.
Yeah. Right. So I'm curious, Sarah, because this is the first time you're building a thing like you're building. I had kind of something to fall back on that I knew, you know, functioned well for me and I'd already experimented with. How did you make this decision about how you were going to deliver your content?
Yeah. Listeners, longtime listeners of the podcast will not be surprised at all to learn that I was a little bit more fly by the seat of my pants on this. When I decided to work on this product and kind of develop it, it was really more in the let's design the thing and then figure out how to ship it out kind of framework. And so when we were, my colleague Tracy and I, when we were working on this, we really kind of developed this series of handouts and these series of videos. And then it kind of came time to, okay, how are we actually going to sell this online? How are we going to package this online? And so then it was a little bit more, okay, what am I confined by or what am I constrained by here? And so since we made the decision to kind of house it on my website for now to kind of minimize additional costs while we were getting it up and running, then I was a little bit constrained by the capabilities of my my platform in terms of web design. So I use Wix, which for the most part has been really great for me. I think there's lots of features that it has that have been really great and easy to use. I generally like the interface and the design elements. And so when I was thinking about, okay, how do we put this product online and make it sellable? You know, do we want it in a bundle? Do we want things sold in individual PDFs? How do we want to do this? And we landed on the idea of having a bundle, at which point I had to look into, okay, how do I create a store and then have a downloadable bundle within the store? And so there were a few different ways of doing that within Wix, but the way we landed on was basically uploading a zip file of all of the individual documents. So it's all in one folder, basically. So when a person buys the content, once they get once they've done their payment and all of that, they get an email that has a link to, or it may even be attached to, I'm not quite sure how they do it, but where they're able to access that zip file and download everything directly to their own computers. The one hurdle we ran into was that Wix is a little newer to the video landscape side of things. So in Wix, you can kind of create your own channels and things that you can put behind paywalls, but it's not super well integrated with the store feature yet. So there was a little bit of troubleshooting I had to do with that. And what we ended up deciding to do is a bit of a workaround that I don't love, but it's where we are right now. And that was in the zip file of all of the documents, there's a document that says, here's the link to your copies of the videos. And that shares a Google Drive folder that has all of the videos that people can then download from there. Part of the reason for doing that was because of the integration I already talked about, but also because Wix has a limit on the size of the files that you can upload. And so when we combined all the video files in with all of the handout files into the zip file, it was too big. And so that was sort of a like learning along the way situation that like, hey, now I know. And I'm sure there are other ways that we could have done the video. I was looking a little bit at Vimeo and some of those things, but for a lot of those kinds of platform features where it's, you know, behind a paywall or, you know, where it's privated or those sorts of things, some of these platforms require additional, you know, subscription fees and that sort of thing. And so because this is a very new venture for us and because we're not really sure how this was going to go, we made the decision to kind of keep it pretty lo-fi this first time around. There are downsides to that, the most obvious of which is there's really nothing stopping somebody who downloads the information from sharing it around. I guess I don't really care about that, and Tracy doesn't really either, in the sense that our end goal here is to get this information out, and that's the primary goal of the product. And so for us, you know, if somebody takes it and shares it around, we have less of a problem with that than others might in terms of trying to sell a particular kind of product online. So, you know, we just kind of had to make some decisions as we went about platform and about how we were going to deliver the content. And some of it was, as I said, kind of constrained by the different aspects of my web design tool, as well as by, you know, the fact that we didn't want to sink a ton of money into something that we're not entirely sure how this is going to roll. So I think we've learned a lot, and for next time, we'll probably do things a little bit differently.
So I think that's a really good point about, you know, like, will people steal your stuff? Because I think this is actually something that people are very concerned about when it comes to creating products and putting things out there. And I feel like part of, and we may have talked about this a little bit in episode one, but when you're bringing something super unique to the table and it's based on your expertise, your experience, it's hard for people to emulate that because it's coming out of a very unique angle. And also, you know, I've thought about this for my course as well. Like, sure, if somebody wanted to download all 85 plus videos that I'm creating and they wanted to make a photocopy of the workbook, like, yeah, they could distribute it. Is it going to be the same level of quality? No. Is it going to be packaged in the way that's going to be convenient and useful for people? No. You know, like there's just, you know, yes, you can kind of do these workarounds and whatever, but it's definitely not ideal. And the person who is going to do that is going to have to do a lot of work depending on what it is that you're building. So I don't know. I like you, I don't worry about that too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always a question because when I started developing this product, a lot of people, when I would share that this is what we were doing, I'd get that question about, well, how are you going to ensure that nobody else steals it and, you know, photocopies it and shares it with all of their staff and whatever. And I was like, I don't care. Like at the end of the day, you know, if I get a sale on this and somebody then shares it with their entire school, awesome. That means that entire school is more well equipped to deal with the kiddos who are coming in and having, you know, these big behavioral reactions because of trauma and stress. Awesome.
Right.
At the end of the day, that's my goal. Like, I'm not in this space to make a ton of money on the backs of frankly, teachers and educators and social workers and others who don't have, you know, a ton of reserve capital to throw at things. So if one person wants to buy it and spread it around, like, okay. That said, listeners who are interested in my content, please buy a thing. I don't want to say like, hey, go find the person who already downloaded it and get it from them. But at the same time, like if people are sharing it, great. That's the goal.
Well, and I think a key purpose of building these products is to establish yourself as an expert in a particular area. Like you're the person who should talk about these things. And I've created a range of products at this point that have led to clients hiring me to be coaches or hiring me to be their coach, to people hiring me to come speak, to people hiring me for live webinars on their campuses because they saw some of my other webinars. I mean, there's just all kinds of things. And that's not even touching on things like the podcast that I'm putting out for free that are allowing people to learn about my work. And like, it's just familiarizing people with the things that we do when you create these kinds of things. And also, I mean, for me, and I'm not sure if this is true as much for you, Sarah, but part of my brand is that I create things. I mean, like this is, I have kind of a productivity brand in some ways. And so, you know, like if I'm not constantly creating things, then it's like, what am I doing?
Right. Well, and I think the other aspect of this too is that when you're thinking about developing a content to deliver online, whether it's a product or a course or whatever, and we'll get into this in the next episode, the being thoughtful about branding. So not only how does it fit into your more global brand, but making sure that all of your stuff is branded. So anybody who passes out handouts from this packet are gonna have my web address all over the place, right? Like it's on every piece of paper that we are, or every handout that we are disseminating in this thing. If you watch the videos, you're going to see my face and Tracy's face. Like you're going to see the people who are doing the work here. So it's not, you know, even if people are handing it out, if they want more information, it's super easy and clear to know where to go. And I feel like a lot of times when I see online products, it's getting better, but like there are often times where I see handouts and things floating around that people are passing out or whatever. And it's not always clear to me where I would go for more information.
Right.
So I think that's just like a basic, you know, branding tip for people. Make sure that your stuff is branded, especially if you're going to sell it, because if it does get passed around, you want people to be able to find you.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So I'm curious, Sarah, especially because both of us in this situation are doing things that are a little bit newer to us. Like I'm doing the print workbook, you're doing the kind of downloadable modules, like the whole thing is kind of new. Were there any points when you were working on the kind of the newer elements where you were like, I really don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if this is gonna work. Like, I mean, what are the kind of points of risk for you and how are you working through that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I laugh because like the whole process has been like that. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to do a thing. I think some of the more frustrating ones were what I alluded to earlier, which was the inability to package things exactly how I wanted to. Like I would love for the videos and the handouts to be in one folder for people to easily access. Like that's what I want. But it was frustrating when that wasn't going to be possible. And then looking into some of the other options and going like, okay, I'm going to have to sink more money into this thing because this doesn't have the functionality that I need. So there were some frustrating kind of pieces there that I was a little bit like, there's got to be a way to do this. Why isn't there a way to do this? So there were periods like that where I was like, well, if I had done my research ahead of time, I might have known that this was not possible in the way I wanted it to be and would have approached it a little bit differently. But I think as with everything, you know, this whole process is a learning experience for me and a really valuable one. So yeah, there are lots of times that I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing here, but I'm at least trying, right? And at the end of the day, like I could sit around and think, well, I don't know what I'm doing here, so I guess I won't do it. Or I could say, I don't know what I'm doing here, so I guess I'll try. And if it doesn't work, then I will learn for next time. Like I've become in the last couple of years pretty accustomed to and pretty happy with failure because it's taught me a lot of things. And I don't mean failure in terms of like the whole business is going up in flames, but these little things that don't quite work the way you want them to, or, you know, if you're, you know, doing a thing and it just, there's lots of bumps along the road, like those things teach you how to do it better the next time. And so even though I often feel like, I don't know what I'm doing, I think that's actually a time when I know that things are working right, as weird as that might sound. When I feel most kind of out of my element is when I'm kind of most in my element, weirdly.
So I want to dig into this a little bit more because I feel like one of the things you just said was like you had a vision and you had to like shift because the yeah, and I have a vision and I don't do that very well. I'm like, no, this is my vision. We are
This
doing
is
it
how it
my
should be.
yeah, like I have a vision and I need to, implement my vision. Can you talk a little bit about that shifting of like, well, okay, I have to find something else. Like, I mean, how are you maybe I mean, like settling is not the right word, but like, how are you adjusting your own expectations for what this thing could look like? And is there any point in the future, if it were to kind of take off and bring in some income, that you would maybe upgrade it at that point? Like, are those kind of thoughts on your mind?
I think that's you've hit right on it. So it's sort of the good enough for now perspective. So when I've run into, we'll just keep using this example of the, Wix not having the capability of uploading bigger files. When I ran into that, like there was a little bit of banging head on desk kind of situation. But then there was the period of like, okay, well, this isn't going to work the way I want it to. What's next? How do I figure this out? What are the other options that I have? And so I spent a little bit of time digging in to things like Vimeo and to things like, okay, if I upload these to Wix, can I make that work? If I put them behind the paywall, no, that doesn't quite work well. So it was a lot of experimentation. And this is really where I think my training as a research scientist comes in handy because I think there were so many times in graduate school when I would be doing research or be doing a process of research and run into a brick wall and go, okay, now what do I do? That I have been well trained in through that process of science and exploration that way. So I think that has really served me well when it comes to facing these kinds of insurmountable hurdles. And figuring out a different way forward and a new way around. So I like the process of experimentation. I like, I don't love the feeling of banging my head against a wall, but I do love the feeling of figuring out a way over the wall or around the wall or, getting a grappling hook and scaling the wall. So I like that process. And so for me, it's less, I think it's less scary than it is for some other people. I've heard people who have done similar kinds of things, they'll run up against a brick wall and just be sort of like paralyzed for a while. I think my period of frustration and paralysis is kind of shorter. And so for me, it doesn't feel as unpleasant to be kind of stuck in that place. And I actually really kind of thrive on the, okay, let's figure out a new way forward. Let's go rogue if we have to, rather than trying to figure out, do I need a totally new platform? It's like, okay, how do I make this work for me in a way that's okay for me, for right now?
So I really like that wall metaphor, and I think a huge difference between us in how we respond to that. And this is definitely tied to your business being your full-time work and my business being a side gig, is I just like pay for a helicopter to lift me over the wall. I mean, I feel like I'm like, what's the platform I actually need? Let's invest in it. Like I do see a lot of those things as investments. I mean, I'm not talking about buying like a luxury helicopter to lift me over the wall, but I do feel like that if I can pay for a service that is going to do something that I can't do myself, like that's really where I draw the line. If I can do it myself, then I'm gonna, use duct tape and gum to get it done. But if it's something where I'm like, okay, I see this as a larger investment in my business, then I will invest in a new tool to kind of shift something forward, especially if it helps me to complete my vision. Like I have a really hard time letting go of my vision.
That's fair. I have this like image in my head of of me being the MacGyver, with the mullet, putting together a grappling hook made out of like paper clips and twine to try to get over this wall. Sometimes that's how it feels, but that's half the fun.
Well, and I think that I mean, I definitely see the position I'm in, having this as a side business, as being somewhat of a position of privilege, and that I've really spent a lot of my business income in the last year, and I'm continuing to do it this year as well, in creating a foundation for the business. And so that means investing in platforms and doing a little bit of experimentation to see what ones I like, what ones I don't, what ones my customers seem to like, so that I can really make the situation, easy for them and also kind of make some of those decisions. And that was why I invested in Buy Our Future. I mean, that was a $2,000 purchase, but I knew that I was going to be needing a core site. I was going to be needing some of the other things that were being included in that. And that made sense to me to make that investment with some of that business income. And in the first year, like I paid out very little of that business income as salary because I was making investments into the business through things like my coaching training and whatever else. So yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely one of the benefits of starting out with a full-time gig and doing this on the side. Even though you're hustling quite a bit, you're also able to reinvest money into different kinds of content delivery platforms, including course sites, you know, webinar platforms, things like that, to see what works and what doesn't.
I think that's a great point because there's a lot of things that I've had to rely on, like the free packages or the free subscription levels for things. You know, and so it's always a little bit of a calculation of, okay, so I could pay, you know, an extra $50 a month to be a part of this super premier package and be able to then do this one thing I want to be able to do. Is that really worth it for me? Is that really worth it for my business, given how much I'm anticipating making on this product? And given that I don't have any idea what I'm going to be making on this product, I kind of got to go a little bit rogue for now. And then next time, you know, or down the line, like you said, when more money is coming in and I can devote more resources to that, making it a little bit better and a better experience for me as well as for my users is definitely a priority. But it's always that balance of where do you want to invest your money now?
Right. Well, and we're going to get into pricing on a different episode and kind of how we're packaging these things. But I think it's also important to note that your product is priced very differently than my product in terms of what we're talking about here. And so part of what I am also concerned with is, if you're paying out thousands of dollars for this product that I'm creating, which some of the pricing packages are that high, I have a 5-figure pricing package for this product. I need to have a good content delivery system. I mean, like there is an expectation that when people are buying this and they're paying a lot of money, that it's going to be really good quality. And so that's something also that's always in the back of my mind, especially when I'm doing a higher ask in terms of pricing. So that's something else I think just to keep in mind. And I've gotten to a point in my business where I've built up to doing those kinds of pricing structures. And I have a little bit of income that I can be like reinvesting into that. And so it's a way of kind of scaling your business up as well. So we'll dive into that more in a later episode, but I think that's an important point to note here as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, do we have other gnarly issues about content delivery that we want to dip into in this episode, or are there other questions or things about platforms?
So I kind of feel like I should do something on the print workbook because I've actually had a lot of people asking me questions about it on social when they see that I'm doing it. So let me just talk about that briefly. And like why I decided to do that content delivery method, because I have never mailed out a product in my life for my business, and it's definitely a thing. So so I think first, this definitely ties back to the conversation about vision, in that when I was first designing this course, I started to create this initially this digital workbook, and it ended up blossoming to being 100+ pages of content that are color-coded and really beautiful. And I designed it in Canva, and you can see examples of this on the sotalbydesign.com website if you want to go take a look.
They're so pretty. I'm so jealous.
I can't even. Like, I just, I mean, I don't mean to be like, this is not bragging. This is just like, good design is so fun to see. And I just happen to be the one that designed this. So,
I like it.
I mean, fun design is just fun design. So anyway, so I created this thing, and it's not really something, it would be basically ruined if I were to create it as like a fillable PDF, in my opinion. Like I just, it would be like killing the product. So I was like, well, maybe I need to do a print version of this. And so I started dinking around online, went to FedEx, was like, you know, if I print this in full color, 100+ pages, it's like $120 or something like that. So I was like, okay, well, obviously that's not feasible. And so I started to look at some kind of print on demand, options for doing things like workbooks. And basically if you print in bulk, you can get the cost of each workbook down to about $10 a piece, but it means pre-ordering them in, you know, at least like a couple hundred basically. So you're paying some upfront cost. And so that was a conversation I had to have with my partner, my life partner, my business partner. And he was like, So we're shipping these things out. Where are we going to store them? You know, like, what are you basically creating a warehouse in our house of these workbooks? to which I was like, well, a little bit, but it's in my office. And so we had to have those discussions. And also just what is the cost of not just printing the workbooks, but also shipping them out? Because if we're, you know, doing this on a consistent basis for some of the packages, they're getting like 26 workbooks. So there's cost to that. And you know, how does that weigh out with what we're pricing the product as and things like that? And also just our time and making sure that the workbooks arrive in good quality. And, you know, the first workbook that I ordered as like a prototype came kind of crunched, you know, like in the mail. And I was like, okay, this, I have to think about this. Like, I have to think about how I can package this in a way that it's not going to get wrinkled. It's not going to bend, you know, like whatever. So anyway, that was definitely something, you know, that's been on my mind. And I'm actually in the process right now as we record this of doing final copy edits on the prototype. And then I'm going to put in a larger order probably within the next few days. Because the other issue is when you order in bulk, in order to get them to you on time where you can ship them out to clients and customers, you have to be like 3 weeks ahead. So I have to think about that as well, because if I get like a rush of orders, you know, manna from heaven, then I have to like, you know, actually have these workbooks that I can ship out, because I tell people I'm going to ship these out like within the week of their order. So I'm either going to have to do a rush order and pay premium if I don't have them in stock. Like that's, so it's an issue of like how many of these things do you keep in stock at any given time? And if you do a bulk order and then you decide you want to change something in the design, then you're kind of out of luck in terms of like you have 200 of these sitting in your house that you have to get rid of first. So it's been an interesting journey to kind of think about what all of that means. And I would definitely say that something that's made me feel a lot more comfortable about it is I watch a lot of other business owners on places like Instagram who are selling physical products. So I know that it can be done. I know that it's not impossible. I know that people can make money and sell physical products. And I'm only selling this physical product with the course license. So you can get one of these workbooks for a minimum price of the initial course license. Like, I'm not selling them separately. I'm, you know, like, they, you really do have to use it with the course in order for it to make sense. So, yeah, I mean, it's just been kind of an interesting like thought process and strategizing around what does it mean to sell a physical product with a digital product.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about this because, again, I think it highlights a difference a little bit between us because, you know, you're saying like this was the vision and this is how it's going to be the best possible experience for somebody, and so you're willing to kind of go through the process of figuring out how to do this and how to make this a fruitful endeavor for you as well as a positive experience for your users. But I hear the like hundreds of dollars for printing plus shipping plus, you know, all the logistics things that you just mentioned. And I definitely am totally the Homer Simpson gif where he's like backing into the bushes. Nope, 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 nope. So I think, you know, in this case, I would definitely be like, yeah, no, that's not the wall I want to scale. Let me figure out how to do it just online. But I think your point is well taken that like, if you have a vision for something and you think like, this is going to be the best way to do it, sometimes you do have to get into the weeds and figure out how to move forward and how to make that vision a reality. And sometimes that means learning a lot about how to ship things.
Right. Well, and also I think, I mean, let me be clear that this has a lot to do with the pricing model that I've chosen for this. You know, like if I was selling these courses for $100, it would not make sense to do a print workbook and ship it and, you know, all these things. Like that would not make sense. But I mean, when I have, and I was talking to my partner about this because he had similar questions. He was the Homer Simpson in this scenario. Like, what are you talking about? Because he just envisions himself being the one who's constantly at the post office. And you know, in all reality, it probably will be him. But, you know, we had this conversation and I said, look, if someone is paying five figures for this and we're paying out $300 to ship them workbooks, even if it's like premium, you know, 2-day mail, making sure that it's, you know, packaged well and it's like shrink wrapped and bubble wrapped and whatever, and it costs us $300, we're still making almost $10,000 in profit. So, well, not quite because of taxes and whatever, but, you know, like I just look at that and I'm like, to me, that's worth that investment. You know, like, yeah. I think that's okay to be doing yep. that. You know, like, I don't see that as being, you know, so crazy and off mm-hmm. the wall, and especially if we're buying these things in bulk. So anyway, I mean, I think that there's a lot of things to weigh. You do have to do the math. And I think in some ways, Sarah, you are better at doing the math than I am, and that, you know, you are really paying careful attention to this, where I'm like, you know what, I don't have to pay my mortgage. So I'm a little bit more flexible about thinking about how the money is spent. I'm not super concerned about drawing, you know, a salary that's going to be right. covering things in my life. Mm-hmm. So that said, I am still trying to draw a salary. I mean, I right. haven't completely given up on that. But yeah, I don't know. I just, I feel like I'm definitely someone who has that vision and really struggles to let it go.
Yeah. Well, and I also think it's really true that it takes some investment. It takes money to make money, right? Like you right. have to invest some of the capital that you can into figuring out how to take the next step. And so I think you're being really smart in the way that you're doing this. And I think that you've got a lot of great ideas and ways to move forward. And I know that you're thinking about already, I'm sure, you know, six months to 2 years down the line, what does this help get you moving towards in terms of your next things and next things that you're excited about. So that's going to be a huge learning experience for you. And I am excited to hear how it goes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
Me too. Well, and I will drop just kind of the little kind of teaser at this point that I am getting pre-orders. So Woo-hoo. That also helps me to feel a little bit better about the workbook and that mm-hmm. I have people who are already basically committed to buying this thing. And that is giving a little bit of the funding that is kind of allowing me to do the workbook as well, in addition to just money I had kind of set aside for things like this. So mm-hmm. I think that makes a difference also. Like if you're going out there and you have no idea if people are going to buy this thing and you're investing all this money into it and then there's mm-hmm. like crickets, obviously that's a problem.
Yeah.
But if you are starting to do like either a pre-sale option or, you know, like, I mean, I had several people reach out to me to say, I really need to purchase this before the end of the fiscal year. Can we make that happen? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, we can. Like, it's not open until June 1, but yes, like, let me send you an invoice. We'll figure it out. And that to me is a great sign. I mean, like that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's good. And I think that when you can build something like that into your process, that kind of gives you a little bit more justification to make a monetary mm-hmm. investment from the beginning, because you know that there's interest and you know that there's a kind of an eager audience that is waiting to buy in the wings.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point. Knowing your audience and listening a little bit to hear, is it crickets or are there people who are beginning to knock on the door and wondering, you know, hey, when are you doing this thing?
Right. So I do want to give one resource because I've just mentioned, you know, this Buy Our Future thing. And I think it's important for listeners to know if you're interested. So Buy Our Future is no longer available. It was open for, I think, 2 or 3 years. And now it has become a new company by Jason and Caroline called Wandering Aimfully, which is basically a monthly subscription service that gets you all the features of Buy Our Future, including Teachery access and a lot of other things, their courses, their books. It's a community that they're building. And they're actually building it open online, you know, sharing all the processes of combining their companies into this new one, which is fascinating. They have a YouTube channel where they're like sharing out all of this interesting stuff, including their branding decisions, their website design, just a lot of really, I mean, if you're a process person like I am, it's a gold mine. I mean, it's just super interesting. But if you're interested and you're thinking like, oh, Teachery sounds interesting, or, you know, the products that Katie's using sound like they're a good fit for me, I would definitely check out Wandering Aimfully. I will drop it into the show notes, the link to it. You can also just Google it. But it's a really helpful, I think, set of tools. And I've been completely satisfied with my work with Teachery. Their help and support is always like incredibly timely if I am having an issue. So I just can't recommend it more. And I really like the work that Jason and Caroline are doing as well. So we'll link to that in the show notes in case you want to learn a little bit more.
Awesome. I'm maybe going to go check that out now too. we'll see.
All right. Well, thank you for, as always, Sarah, being like the opposite side of my coin.
I suspect listeners are just sort of like, oh yeah, that's how it goes.
Right, right. It's normal now. It's normal.
It's
now.
Normal. Yeah. No, it's delightful. It's always great hearing how you're approaching these things, because I learned so much from you and think about how I can apply it in my life. So it's great. I always love chatting about this stuff.
Well, ditto from me as well. And thanks also to our listeners for joining us for this episode on platform choice and content delivery. So Sarah, until next time, thanks for chatting.
Yeah. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Make Your Way. Show notes and a transcript for this episode can be found at katielinder.work/podcasts. Make Your Way is part of the Radical Self-Trust podcast channel, a collection of content dedicated to helping you seek self-knowledge, nurture your superpowers, playfully experiment, live your core values with intention, practice loving kindness toward yourself and others, and settle into your life's purpose. Learn more about the RST channel at katielinder.work/podcasts. If you found this episode helpful, please also consider rating and/or reviewing the show in iTunes. Thanks for listening.